Welcome to the Round 12 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined again by FB Donkey. We missed you last week, mate, so welcome back.
Thanks, mate. I did put out on Twitter on the weekend that my wife beat me in Supercoach, and people said I should miss this week as well, and that she should take my place.
I saw quite a lot of likes on that, so it gave me a bit of a laugh. I like that. And I think I beat you 2 weeks in a row, Mark, so I beat you again this week. Pretty G'd up.
I think you beat me by a lot this week, mate.
22.88 for me. So we'll get into our score review now, I guess. 22.88 off the back of, I did another upgrade. So I only have Adams and Menzel as my two sort of rookies left playing on field. So I was reasonably confident that the team would start producing bigger scores. Of course, I think we both copped the Goldstein donut, but Selwood's 150 really helped. I had some PODs that were still probably limping along, like Toby Green, 57 was not superb. Chatty Wingard, though, continues to score well with 110. So for the price I paid for him, he's now gone up, I think, 80,000. And Boyd, for his second week in my team, notched up a 128, which I was very, very happy to see. And Jimmy Bartel continues to kill it, 115. He's averaging 96 now for the season and looking like quite a good pick for now, touch wood. But with his age, I have to be a little bit cautious with celebrating too early. But quite happy with that as well, Mark. And I'm sure you'd be happy with him as well. How'd you score, mate?
Not quite as good as that. I had a really frustrating weekend. I obviously had the Goldstein donut and I just didn't have a way out of it, so I just decided to cop that. I scored 21.54, dropped 800 spots in the rankings out to 1,800. Last time I was on the podcast, I was sitting nicely in the top 1,000. So I need to come back a little bit over the buys and get my season going again. I just pointing out my team, like I can't really see where I dropped off a lot. I had Matty D on field with 48, Montagna 45, Dusty Martin 74, Hall 52, and I've still got that rookie on M8, so Josh Smith got 65. So I guess that's what did it, and I just missed the big ones. Like I tried out Kerridge a couple of weeks ago, no Selwood. So yeah, just overall didn't go great. And on the Sunday, I was actually looking all right with Boyd smashing it and Libba smashing it, but then Montagna, just worst game in a long, long time for him. So looking to come back this week, mate, and bring in another premium midfielder.
It sounds like, you know, most of this poor scores were actually a result of premiums just having an off game. So hopefully that turns around for you. I know, you know, some of those players that you listed, like Martin and Montagna, that I don't have that you do have, they're definitely, you know, massive worries for me on a week-to-week basis. In terms of our group update, the top score for the week, Mark, was from Aussie's Bonsai Warriors, a long-time listener of the show. He scored 25.82.
Whoa.
I know, absolutely massive. 11.
Like 500 more than me.
Mm-hmm. 11th highest score for the round, which is absolutely massive. So with that score, he jumped into the top 10,000. I'd imagine he climbed quite a few spots with that score.
Like 30,000 spots or something. Mm-hmm. That is a very, very big score.
Mm-hmm. 9178 is his ranking, and I'm sure Faz would be and Dunny would be hoping for a similar turnaround to Aussie. So congrats to you, mate, and welcome to the top 10,000. Just want to plug our Facebook and Twitter. Remember, on Tuesdays, you can hit us up to ask us questions and we use them to formulate the show. This week, we're going to be looking at rookies and a few underperforming premiums as we do each week, like Aaron Hall, and then some potential ins as well. Rocky obviously dominating that talk, Mark, after a massive 200. Oh, absolutely huge. First game back as well. So that's the Supercoach absolute gun that we know and love. Before we get on into the show, just want to plug patreon.com/supercoachcoach for anyone looking to help with the run costs of the show. We thank all our supporters so far this year. It's been a massive, massive help and definitely alleviates the stress of having to pay to keep this going. So thank you very much, everyone
that
out there.
Really, really has made a huge difference to the year and it gives me an incentive to come and talk to you every week, mate.
Oh, you needed an incentive, mate. crushing. All right, let's get into the show for the week, Matt. We'll start off with the rookies, and there's not many forward line downgrade options, unfortunately. So that's a question that we've gotten from Simon Adam. Forward rookies are getting fat and nothing on the horizon to cash in for. And the worry is trading into a rookie prematurely before the buys and potentially picking up, you know, a donut for that buy period. I've got Ben Kennedy on the benchmark, for example, and I'm actually pretty concerned. Like, how do I trade them out to forward line rookies and get this cash into some premiums? Do you see anything coming up on the horizon?
I mean, Will Hams played on the weekend and probably didn't set the world on fire, and he's a bit expensive, so it doesn't sound like an amazing pick. There's no one that I've really got my eye on at the moment that I'm thinking, yep, they're coming through, yep, they're coming through. Yeah, I'm not seeing them coming, to be honest, mate. I'm sure something will pop up at some stage, though. I think one way of doing it is that you can trade like Adams into your forward line. So you could do the Ben Kennedy to Collins this week if it's not putting him on the field. Other than that, struggling.
That's the situation I'm in, Mark. I'd have to trade Kennedy out into the back line, but the problem is Adams is on field. So if I cash him down, I'm going to have to play Ruggles.
I wouldn't be doing that if you could avoid it. There was talk of Tom Phillips from the Pies on the weekend. He had 30 touches and 3 goals, draft pick from last year. Might get a game at some stage.
Yeah. There's Jackson Payne, who went up only 16,000, but his scores have been 45, 47, and 22, so I'm not sure.
22? You'd be better off just picking a bloody floating donut, mate.
Yeah.
I need more points out of it. I was really hoping Shane Yaron from Fremantle would get some games at some stage as a mature age rookie, but it seems to have been dealing with injury all year. I know Jack Silvani kicked 4 on the weekend. He'll get a game at some stage. Like, someone will come up at some point. Otherwise, you might be best off trying to pick like a mid-forward floating donut really for the rest of the year. That's a long way from ideal, but you can pick up some of the points that you miss out on by covering donuts through using the loophole, I guess.
Would you wait until after the buy and hold on to perhaps overripe rookies so that you're not introducing potential donuts into your team before this buy series? Or if you need the cash, would you just commit to trading down to a donut player?
My personal view is that I'd probably tried to avoid trading down to the donut player until at least sort of like late in the buys, maybe. There's no ideal solution, though. Kennedy, in your example, should be back pretty soon. I think he had 30 touches and 3 goals on the weekend.
At this stage, I'm looking at transferring Adams into the forward line, upgrading Kennedy and downgrading somewhere else for cash.
Somewhere else, basically, you mean you can only downgrade in the midfield.
Yeah. Or like a Ruggles down back. But yeah, basically, I'm going to be holding on to rookies like Marcus Adams, perhaps even on my bench, non-playing for longer than I want to, just because you don't really want to be introducing donuts at this stage. Michael Aitness, he did play a game as a forward rookie.
I think he got injured, I was reading today. I definitely had my eyes on him because I think he's been in the system a couple of years now and hasn't had a chance yet, but I'm pretty sure I read that he got injured.
His scores indicate he did because he scored 23. Not super options. I think I'm hopeful that Grimley comes back in at some stage as a forward ruck, but unfortunately he's injured for the moment, I know, for at least a couple more weeks. So
I probably wouldn't be too confident on him.
Anyway, we'll move past the forward rookies. Unfortunately, we don't have particularly good news to deliver. We'll move on to the rookies that are actually playing and doing reasonably well and scoring and are on the bubble this week. So we'll start off by talking about Sam Collins, I suppose, Mark, because he's the name that everybody seems to be talking about this week after his score of 100 on the weekend. How'd you see his game against the Bombers?
I think 2 weeks ago before he played his first game, I was a big rap for Collins as a pick because with Pierce out and all the other key defenders out, I thought he should have played every week for the rest of the season and averaged 50 to 60. I still see him averaging about that 50 to 60. I think people are going to get sucked in with his score against the Bombers and some people are going to trade him in and play him on field. That seems like probably not a great idea because he's not going to be in 100-point wins every week where he's going to get some of those easier touches. So I don't think he's a must-have rookie, but definitely someone that all teams should strongly consider. For me, it's a little bit tricky because I've already got Brand on my defensive bench and I was actually hoping to keep Tipper, Adams, that type of player to rotate onto the field. So if I bring in Collins, I'm definitely weakening my back bench a lot, but then I do get a lot of money out of it. And I'm probably leaning towards bringing him in, but with Rich, Bartel, Shaw and Brand, he will be my fifth round 15 defensive player. So it means that I'm probably going to have to trade out a player like Rich come round 15.
I'm in that situation, Mark. And to be honest, that's kind of the reason why he is more than likely ruled out for my side. I do want to see him scoring and playing consistently as a backup player more than anything. And I don't think that a backup player is necessarily enough for me to have to trade out premiums for. So I'm probably a little bit less likely to go with him. There's another backline rookie on the bubble, Harrison Marsh from Sydney, and he's been in the system for 3 years now. Didn't play a senior game in those first 3 years, and he actually got delisted. Picked back up on the rookie list, and this year gets his opportunity. His Supercoach scoring isn't particularly inspirational, 51 and 41, but at least he has a slightly more friendly buy for myself as a round 14 buy player. Have you watched any of his game, mate?
I've seen a little bit of him. I think my understanding is as soon as Teddy Richards is back, he is out.
One last backline rookie, Thomas Cole, as a back mid player, 48 and 41. I think he was actually a late in.
He was a play replacement for Jeremy McGovern after. He played okay in his first game, 14 touches. He's been an emergency for most of the year. He seems like he's probably going to remain on the fringe of that side sort of for the rest of the year, really. So might be a bit in and out.
So unfortunately, it sounds like despite Cole and Marsh being more friendly for me buy-wise, both being round 14 buy players, their job security is poor enough that they might not be playing anyway come the buy period.
Yeah, I think you're better off just putting yourself at more risk in round 15.
All right. Well, if you're looking to...
I know it sucks, but...
If you're looking to downgrade in the midfield, there is one player on the bubble that did play on the weekend. Granted, his first game was in round 3, so 7 rounds apart, and 25 and 26 are his two scores. But Matthew Goodyear from Collingwood is on the bubble in the midfield. But with Trengove and Jansen coming up, Matheson still on the bubble, it's hard to see anybody picking a player like Goodyear.
Yeah, no, definitely not into consideration. He took one amazing one-handed mark on the weekend, but other than that, it was pretty quiet and was beaten to a lot of contests. Has been playing really well in the VFL, but I just think that, like you said, there's better options.
So if Collins looks like the main legitimate option for the week, but you weren't actually looking to downgrade in the back line this week, we've got a question here from Robbie Muddy or Muddy Moose on Twitter. Is it worth going a week early on a Trengove or Jansen type with cows ready to cull? And he has quoted Hewitt here. And there have been quite a few people asking about Hewitt after he got concussed and didn't come back with a score of only 11. His break-even's 95 and he's set to drop a little bit at 280,000. So for people looking to downgrade in the midfield, would you then consider going a week earlier on either of these two blokes?
Just want to give a shout out to my mate Gary. I know he listens, and he had Mills on the field with the emergency on Hewitt on the weekend, and Mills was laid out and he didn't see it and copped Hewitt's 11. So suck it, Gary.
I thought that was going to be like a nice shout.
not at all. I brought Trengove into my team last week, mate. I think that him and Petrarca have been the two rookies that I would have been happy to bring in unseen. Collins was also very pretty close to that level. Everyone's going to end up with him in their team, aren't they? Like, I know he's a bit more expensive, but he took a little bit to get into the game on the weekend, but had about 15 touches in the second half and looked really good. Absolutely have faith to go on Trengove. Given what happened to Matheson, I'm a little bit more skeptical about Jansen, and I'd want to see at least one more game, even though his first game was really, really good scoring-wise. But yeah, I'd definitely take one of those guys ahead of the other shit that's available.
I also went a week early on Trengove, Mark, so...
It's like, isn't it like 2 weeks early on Trengove?
Yeah.
I don't really remember bringing in too many rookies without playing a game.
Just the call out would be that at 156,000, he does affect your upgrade. Most people don't have a significant amount of cash in bank. And if you're just trading out 250, 300K rookies, trading down to a player like Trengove means that, I don't know, if you're trading Ben Keys down, for example, you'd only get 100K out of that. So if you're then upgrading another 250K rookie, you only have, 350K to play with. So it does sort of hamper your ability to upgrade, and therefore Jansen might be more attractive this week for you, or even Matheson if he comes back.
I think that's with Christensen injured, there's probably a good chance that Matheson will actually be back this week.
Alrighty, off the rookies now, Mark, and we'll move into some injury questions. The first question is more of a premature injury question, in anticipation of a possible late out. This question is from Wade Miles on Facebook. Thank you for your question. Is it worth burning a trade and trading Nick Nat to potentially somebody like Gorn this week? Nick Nat carrying that Achilles injury and under a cloud for this weekend's game. And further to that, an Achilles injury might hamper Nick Nat for games coming up. He only scored 71 on the weekend, for example, and it's an injury that doesn't just go away.
Oh, it's not really my reading of the situation, though. They were saying today that it's an old injury. He just had a bit of soreness after playing on the Etihad service, and that he would be right for this week. It's just a precautionary thing that he had crutches. And I got no reason not to really believe that. The biggest thing for me is I just feel, and we've been through this in the past, Marcus, is as soon as you trade in the rucks for a one-week injury, I just feel that fate is going to totally screw you and whoever you trade to is also going to get injured. And then you just end up in a roundabout of trades.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I just wish we started with a Cox type, Mark, because we would have had cover this week.
And yeah, it would have been a lot better.
Oh, well, learning experience. I think that does take us to the next question, though.
Just on that point, I think I was actually more likely to start Grimley than I was Cox. And I would have been in exactly the same situation with Grimley.
Yep.
Well, I could have opened up a little bit of DBP, but then you start getting into using even more trades and bringing in players you don't really want, that sort of stuff.
So it does take us to our next question. This one's from Stephen Venn on Facebook. Is it too late in the season to burn two trades to set up an RF DPP? So we'd be in that situation. Would you consider Tippett at F6 to cover Nick Nat and any further injuries down the track? Tippett playing out of the ruck has seen him average 95. He's had a few scores in the 70s, but 65 is his low, which isn't too bad for Tippett. 95 with that ruck forward flexibility and ability to cover Nick Nat, I mean, that's pretty tempting.
Yeah, it is. I think Lysette's probably just as good a pick as Tippett. I'm a bit concerned bringing in a 95 that you're limiting your forward scoring potential, whereas you could get a Dalhouse that might go 105. So is that 10 points per game going to be made up by the player covering other games? It also gets tricky with the buys. Like, I'd really like to have a round 13 player in that spot, because then with Goldie and Nick Nat, then you're at least having one ruck through every buy. I looked pretty closely at bringing in Gorringe last week. That was probably my next move. It was either Copper Donut or bring in Dan Gorringe, but Phillips was just coming back from injury, so I thought that his job security was a bit low, but it would have added an extra 90 points to my team. If you don't have the ruck forward link already, I don't think that it's worth using that many trades for it. If you do have the ruck forward link, I think Tippett's probably a pretty decent option.
Especially with Wells carriage types that people might consider keeping as a seventh forward, having a slightly weaker F6 that you might be able to loophole with a floating donut player in your last forward spot could be a good option as well. Alrighty, we'll move on to some general outs and ins now, Mark. The first question here is from Jim Fairweather, and this question has been brewing in the community for a little while now. Started the year with Aaron Hall, which he was wrapped with. Have you got any information on the major reasons for his recent mediocrity? So, averaging 125 from rounds 1 to 4, and then from 5 to 11, averaging 77. Is he cooked, tagged, injured, out of the midfield, or just in poor form?
There's only one thing worse than having started with him, and that would be bringing him in.
No, that, nope, not going to bring me down.
It was all over Twitter on the weekend that he attended zero centre bounces, whereas in those early games he was attending the most. So how does he go from one to the other? He did have a pretty significant shoulder injury. I can't remember which game it was. Maybe the West Coast game. He copped an extra knock, like, really early in the game on it. So you would think that he's probably struggling a lot with that. And Gold Coast is so down on players, and he can get out on the field, so they're just playing him anyway. You would think that that's having a huge impact on his form. I think that we probably understate how often players are carrying injuries in the AFL and how that affects their form. And, look, if he was around 14, 15 by player, I'd be looking to move him on. If he was in the midfield, I'd probably be looking to move him on this week. But I think I'd struggle to move him on this week just as a forward. It just doesn't suit my trade plans. But I can definitely understand the desire to get him out, and I'm not totally against getting him out.
Alrighty, we'll move on to the ins now. The next question is from David Siddles asking about Tom McDonald. Do you think he can keep it up after 99, 74, 99, and 94 in his last four rounds? So his break even's down to 50 now, truly bottomed out, went up already 14K last week, and we talked about wanting to see a bit of turnaround in form before trading him in. Is this enough to tempt you, Mark?
No, not for me, mate. I think I've just signed off from Tom McDonald this year. I had him last year and it was really good. But the odds on last year being the one-off spike are just too high for me to really be messing with this. He's still only had one score over 100 from the year. Hasn't had any really big scores. He's, for anyone that picked him up really cheap a few weeks ago, he's been great with those scores. But is he going to average among the top backs? I think his form is a little bit too patchy for me, and he's too likely to have a down game here or there. So still a no from me, mate, but well done to those that did pick him up really cheap.
I agree with that. Next question is from Paul Maltman. How many trades is too many for Rocky each season? So seems he's in and out every season, and this year is no different. And he keeps tempting us because we know just how massive his upside is. And after 204 over the weekend, I mean, the good part is there's some insurance built in right there with his score. His break even's 55 this week.
As long as he doesn't get injured week one, you should get a decent price movement out of him, and you can always swap him out to someone else. And look, I already had him at the start, so that's one trade. A downgrade to get some money and an upgrade this week, so that's three trades. And then if he goes out one more time, that's four. That's probably my limit.
Sounds like you might roll the dice then, mate.
I mean, look, we're playing a gambling game where you have to take some risks, and I think Rocky's upside is totally worth the risk. I understand he's been injured and it's been recurring injuries for the last couple of years, and this year particularly some soft tissue injuries, which he hasn't been able to get on top of. But I was talking last week that they did diagnose it as a sciatic back-related injury, and he's doing some back workouts to try and stay on top of that. And whether he's had enough time off or not, whether 3 weeks off is enough to really manage an injury like that is definitely still questionable. But I mean, I just keep thinking the last 6 weeks of last year, 135, 115, 145, 122, 146, 152. Rocky is just the sort of player that at 500K, if you don't get him and he goes nuts, you're completely out of contention. That doesn't mean that if he doesn't go nuts, good on you and you didn't pick him and you're not out of contention. But if he does, then he's an absolute must-have. I know that term gets thrown around way too much, but if he goes nuts, you must pick him this week.
It's probably appropriate to coin a player like Rockcliffe a must-have, especially after they fittingly scored 204 over the weekend. So I definitely see where you're coming from, Mark. If we started him at 50K more, at 550,000, then at 500K after he just scored 204, it's sort of like, how can you deny that? To be honest, because I've got 8 premium midfielders at this very moment, I don't know that my team's set up to necessarily bring in Rockcliffe. So at the moment, I'm sitting on no, but I can definitely understand why people are bringing him in and taking the risk on him.
And that's why I'd held off on that 8th midfield spot, was that it seemed like there was a few cheap midfield premiums coming through that were going to be pickable about now coming into the buys, particularly Selwood and Rockcliffe. And it was always just going to be a battle of which one I thought was going to be the best pick out of those two guys.
I spent two of the last 3 weeks picking up two 500K premiums in Pritis and Gray. And yeah, I mean, I'd penned in Rockcliffe as a potential in from about a month ago. I just didn't see him scoring 204. I'm guessing if you're in my spot, Mark, you wouldn't sideswap a Wines or Libba to him, or would you even consider that?
To be honest, mate, I think that if I was fully upgraded in that spot, I would be extremely tempted to swap Wines to him.
You know, I can't resist the valley. I've picked up so many cheap blokes like Wingard and Pritis and stuff in the last few weeks. I'm trying not to think about him, if anything, because he's sneaking into my thoughts. All right, Mark, last question here from at PFP Elliot, or Elliot Hoffman on Twitter. He's considering bringing in Selwood perhaps instead of Rocky this week. Selwood v. Rocky basically is his question. He needs around 15 by midfielder and cannot decide. Thoughts on Selwood as compared to Rocky, Mark?
It's hard to get a read on Selwood, mate. He had 3 low games in a row, tagged by Greenwood and Curno the last 2 weeks, and tagged really effectively, and it also affected Geelong's ability to win the game. So from that perspective, I expect the tag to continue to go to him, as it has in previous seasons.
Yeah. And he was tagged on the weekend as well. Cornelio was tagging him.
And he was on 70 at three-quarter time. Like, he'd had another really low game. Looked like he was going to struggle to get 100. And then 12 possessions in the last quarter, 9 contested, kicked a goal, just went completely nuts and won them the game, and he's scored 80 points. So really tough to get a read. Like, I don't want to get too carried away that it was really one quarter in the last 4 weeks of really kick-ass football. But then he doesn't seem to have many 100 games. He seems to score 80 or 140 plus. And he's real patchy with that. So I'm scared to not pick him at 515 because in the past, if you do pass Selwood up at that price, a bit like what I was saying with Rockliffe, if you don't have him, he can totally rule you out of your chance to win the game because he can just go on such huge runs. I just have him behind Rocky in the sense that he seems more likely to get tagged and more likely to have the lower game. He seems like his ceiling over a 10-week period just isn't going to be as big as Rockliffe's. His average last year, Selwood, for the year was 106, and he's averaging 108 this year, and he seems to be playing very similarly, so there's a good chance that he's just repeating last year and he's going to just average 108 for the year. The other fact was that he hasn't actually missed a game yet, and there was talk in the preseason that he would be missing games this year. The fact that Geelong, if they get to the point where they're going to lock in a top four spot, maybe he might get a rest on the run home. So I think that you have to factor that into his average as well. So for those reasons, I just have Rocky ahead, but realistically, I'd love to have both of them into my team. If I already had the money to bring Rockliffe in this week, I'd be very tempted to do Libba Selwood as well.
I obviously have some natural bias in play because I've had Selwood for a few rounds now and I'm a Geelong supporter, so take what I say with a grain of salt. But for me, it's definitely Selwood ahead of Rockliffe. Three factors: one, injury history, Rocky struggling so far this year; two, Brisbane are a bottom four side, whereas Geelong are trying to fight for the top four. And even though there could be potential rests on the horizon, I see that as a maximum one rest because we have lost three games now, dropped two to sides that aren't sitting in the top eight at the moment in Collingwood and Carlton. And we do have, you know, North and Bulldogs coming up, Sydney after the bye. So I don't know how comfortable we will necessarily be to run out the season. And the last point is, of course, you know, compared to the last few years where he hasn't had much to support and has still managed a pretty good average, this year Dangerfield is in the team. You know, even though
maybe also steal some clearances and some goals.
That's definitely a potential, but I would say that Selwood's ability to get uncontested possession is a lot higher this year than it has been in previous years as well. Well, it's Selwood getting the ball out of the guts or he's not scoring. And this year, his uncontested possession numbers have been higher than really ever before, and that's part of the reason why he's been tagged a lot as well, is that, you know, Danger plays that inside game all the time, but now Selwood has that dangerous outside game as well because Danger's feeding the ball to him. So you could argue that his potential upside to go on a big streak is also increased. You know, you can fight it either way. Like I said, I take it with a grain of salt, and it's a very close decision anyway, Mark. Like you're saying, Selwood and Rocky, you're thinking about doing both. I'm on the Selwood camp, and as I would be, because Selwood's in my team, mate.
And you're not bringing Rocky in, so yep, you absolutely are completely biased and should not be taken seriously. Considering I have neither in my team and I have to pick one and I'm picking Rockliffe, clearly I should be listened to. And when Rockliffe does get injured and fails, please do not come back at me and say that I said that.
All right, that takes us to the end of the Round 12 show. Thank you very much for joining us and all the best for your trades this week. Good luck and catch you next week. See ya. Don't want to get crazy. Don't want to get crazy. Let's get crazy.